All right, we're going to begin our new study this evening. The main topic heading is Lies the World Tells, which will give us quite a broad range of topics that could be included in this, but really the objective is to get our own thinking sharpened so that we can discern the wrong thinking that maybe we have imbibed from the propaganda from the world. Tonight I'm going to talk about a topic which you might not at first understand why I chose it, but hopefully it'll become clearer as we progress. The title tonight of my talk is Democracy. The implication here is that democracy is one of the lies the world tells. Most Christians think that God only speaks to a very limited religious realm. They say he speaks about salvation and the limited activities of the institutional church, but not much more than this. God's voice has relevance in these areas, these limited narrow areas. However, beyond that, in all the affairs of life, it's the voice or wisdom of man that is granted authority. So man grants the authority to man's wisdom. Now, people might not spell it out like this, but in reality, this is how they live. Most church members live in this dualistic world where God's voice is confined to the narrow defined religious realm and religious issues. Man's voice prevails for all other areas. One area to them is regarded as religious, and the other area is secular or really unconnected to God and His truth in many ways. Such people deny that God has spoken a comprehensive word that touches every aspect of man's existence, and thus they restrict His words and authority to their narrowly defined religious issues, and whatever those are is up for grabs really in the sense of what they define as religious. It's vital, however, to realize that all of life is religious because all of life is lived by faith in an absolute authority. Now, not all people have the correct absolute authority, but they have an absolute authority nonetheless. And thus, every decision that people make and every idea that they hold to is religious in its most fundamental essence. Every single conclusion people arrive at is a religious conclusion. There is no escaping from being religious. The only question is, are you standing upon true or false religion in arriving at your conclusion? Is your source of authority true or false? Thus, is your faith true or false? Because everybody's working, living by faith. They're all believing in stuff and they're all relying upon stuff. And it's just the question is it true or is it false faith? Democracy is held as a religious dogma in our day. Because it is. It's a religious dogma. It is religious zeal that promotes and defends democracy as the unquestionable source of all good things. We will risk lives of our soldiers to go and establish democracy in a place. And so we'll sacrifice their lives for this greater good of a democratic situation. Now, I'm not getting into that debate whether the principles are right or wrong in that thing, but I'm just saying this idea of democracy is such a central and almost unchallengeable idea. It just permeates everything. When the existence of the only true God is denied, this doesn't mean that the idea and function of God ceases to exist. In man's mind, God continues to be there. He's a religious being, and then when he denies the true God, the idea and the concept in his mind about God or a God continues to be there. So God is the supreme authority over all things and for whom all things exist. The direction and the focus of all things is unto God, to worship and serve him. So when the true God is done away with in man's thinking, man's need for authority and truth doesn't cease to exist, and thus another source for truth and authority is looked for. So we deny God as our source of authority, but as soon as we do that, we start looking for another source of authority so that we can justify our actions, so that we can feel confident in our thoughts and our beliefs. Where then does man find his supreme authority? He finds it in man. As soon as you reject God, you find your authority in man. When Israel made the golden calves at the base of Sinai, they shifted the source of their authority from God to man, though they still claimed to be following the true God. But the source of authority was now man. So the God who had delivered them from Egypt was the one they claimed to be following, but that was not who was leading the nation now. We read in Exodus 32 and verse 1. Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." So here the people gather, the people come up with a conclusion, the people come up with the next step of what we should be doing. Vox populi, vox Deo. Voice of the people is the voice of God. And so the people now came up with a conclusion and presented, this is now the source of our authority. Our combined, united wisdom, that is the direction we're going to be led by. But when we think God, we are to think one, the one and only true God. Hear, Israel, the Lord thy God, the Lord is one God. There is only one God. And we are to think authority or law. When we think God, we are to think authority, law, direction. He guides us. Man is accountable to live by every word from his mouth. When this position is denied to the true God, it is granted to something or someone else. When man grants to himself the position of supreme authority, in principle he has unleashed many gods into existence. That's what he's done. So as soon as we say as a corporate body that man is the ultimate authority, we've suddenly, there's just myriads of gods have now been introduced into our society. Every man presumes to be his own final authority, which means he has introduced many gods into the realm. So everybody's ideas are now equal in that sense. Practically every time people open their mouth in our day and age, they are declaring something to be right or wrong. Turn on the radio. Listen to a talk show. Listen to anybody discussing anything. They're going to be making some comment. They're going to be making some statement. This is right. This is wrong. Can you believe that? Could you imagine this happening? Every time they speak, they are making these judgments and decisions. They're declaring these things to be right or wrong. However, they are doing it independently of God's word because they've granted God-like authority to themselves. However, when you have many gods, you have many definitions of morality and thus many conflicting laws. Okay, so you've got a problem. This is what man wants to be. He wants to be his own God. He wants to be an authority unto himself. And he suddenly realizes we've got these conflicts amongst ourselves because we don't all agree. Okay, so now we have to try and force this issue to find a place of stability, at least some kind of gauge that we can stand upon, some foundation. So what is it? Becomes the democratic opinion, the voice of the people. The majority have spoken. This is the truth. That's what they revert to, is to stand upon the majority's opinion. The people's voice, which is determined by a majority consensus, or what you've been told was the majority consensus. What exists is an unbending trust in the democratic process, because it's this process that holds the solution to all man's problems and difficulties, so it's believed. The people can't be wrong. So the dominating religious belief behind the idea of democracy, there's one dominating belief behind this idea of democracy, and that's equality. There's this desire for absolute equality. Now, biblically speaking, while all people are equally accountable to God and all equal in His eyes in the sense that they are created in His image, there is not complete equality in the way God's kingdom functions. All people are not equal in the functioning of this kingdom administration. The French Revolution, which was an extremely pagan event, although they celebrate it with great gusto and zeal today, every year they celebrate the great storming of the Bastille and the whole mayhem that came out of the French Revolution. And don't let people try and convince you that the French and the American revolutions were the same. They were based on vastly different foundations with vastly different goals and vastly different outcomes. All people are not equal in the functioning of God's kingdom administration. So the slogan of the French Revolution was liberty, equality, and fraternity. And by equality, they denied any person was any better than someone else in the administration of life and liberty. So the way life functions, nobody's different, we're all equal. Equality is the thing that we're aiming at. They drew up the Declaration of the Rights of Man, but this document rested upon nothing. And so they sought authority for this document. How can we base this document on something? Because we've given man these rights, we need something to base it upon. They turned to the voice of the people, whom they equated with the Supreme Being. As the Christian says, we base our authority on the Supreme Being, in reality, the true God, as your Christians would always do, we base our understanding on what God has said. They said, we're basing this on the voice of the people who is the Supreme Being. So He speaks the supreme word to us through the people. They got an actress to represent the goddess of reason and carried her shoulder high into the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, demonstrating a clear thing. There is our God, the voice of reason. This is the goddess. And we go into the chamber of God's cathedral to demonstrate we do not believe in God's voice, but in the voice of man and man's reason. And that is our authority and the basis upon which we stand. There's our confidence and there's our hope. So they sought to wipe out the past. And they declared 1792, which was the year of the revolution, some 13 years after the American Revolution. But they declared 1792 as year one. Man has been born again. It's a new beginning for mankind through this wonderful birth that has taken place. Everyone was to be equal. Well, almost everyone was equal, except for the 40,000 that were massacred. They were less than equal, but that was part of the need to get back to perfection. You see, the emphasis in the idea of democracy is equality, which produces atomistic individuals. It does. We want to make everybody equal, but what that does is produce atomistic individuals. This kind of equality destroys community, because it undermines the authority structure required for the functioning of community. When everybody's an individual, a law unto themselves, you've destroyed the possibility of community. And that's basically what democracy, when it champions equality, that's what it's doing. It's destroying community. What is the most important unit in the functioning of society? Family. The most important unit in God's kingdom functioning. What happens when the idea of democracy and equality dominates the thinking in a family? Chaos. Because once you go down that route, what gets emphasized are each individual's rights and will. Everyone's desires become equal, and thus people fight for their rights. Rights that are defined by each individual or by the voice of the people. The United Nations Charter for Children and things like that. That's the voice of the people, theoretically. And so you've got all these rights, because what you're doing is you're destroying community and you're establishing this equality and individualism, and every individual is equal with another individual. How do you grant credibility to this notion that authority and law flow from the democratic process? How do you do that and avoid the unbiblical notion of equality? You can't. Not only are the husband and wife made equal in the working of the family unit, but the children too are made equal with the parents. This idea of equality is lived out in families every day. The manifestation of this will be different, but the philosophy is there, and it's being worked out and manifested in different ways in different families. But the root cause is the same. Have you ever seen a two-year-old that has no doubt in his mind that his desires are equal with his parents' desires? Maybe you haven't. Though usually the kids' desires are a little more than equal than their parents' desires. The child will determine what he's going to eat, he's going to determine what he is going to do or isn't going to do, he's going to determine when he's going to go to bed, he's going to determine all these things, he's going to lay it down because he's equal. And my parents want me to do something, but my will is as equal as theirs, and I decided I want to do something else. And so now you've got the standoff. Not much can be done. And when the philosophy is there, well, who am I to impose my will upon this equal being? So you can see the implications that it has in the family. And the parent, by indulging the will of the child, kind of feels gratified because they're not imposing their will upon another equal being. They feel that they're doing this great work of humanity by not imposing themselves upon another being. And that comes from the philosophy that there's this equality, there's this democracy, this is how we function. And there's this individualism that gets exalted and pulled out of context. The individual's desires and will and ambition is held up at a very high level. But this kind of behavior, going back to the two-year-old, this kind of behavior destroys community. It destroys the family and it renders it ineffective or greatly reduces its effectiveness. You see, the parents' justification for allowing this behavior will be the voice of the people. Well, if you look around and you see how most children are raised and you see how most things are done, we're in the majority. And so the voice of the people speaks into this, and your confidence now is, well, I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. You are now pressurized by the peer group, but the voice of the people's opinion of how to even train children. And so you change your training methods for that sake. But God has spoken. That's what they say. God has spoken through the people. So this is how we do it. So that's the democratic wisdom that is coming to us. Whatever manifestation it takes, you know, whether it's you looking around and watching parents how they train their children or how they indulge their children, or you are intimidated by their opinions, you're modifying your behavior accordingly. You see, democracy reduces society down to atomistic individuals who are all equal. The biblical idea, however, has community as God's goal. And the most basic building block of this community is not the individual, but the family unit. That's the most basic building block. We don't reduce it smaller than that. We do not. God does not function outside of it. Yes, you can have individuals that are involved in certain things, but the most basic and fundamental building block is the family unit. And the family unit has an authority structure revealed by God, and thus all family members are not equal. They never have been, and they never will be. They are equal before the law in the sense that they are accountable to the law, but they are not equal in the functioning of God's kingdom authority structures. These structures are vital to the proper working of the kingdom. Some law standard is going to be implemented in the working of the family. It's either going to be in line with God's sovereign word, or it's going to be determined by man's sovereign word. In Scripture, the broader community was overseen by elders who were heads of households. We read about that in Exodus 3 and verse 16. The elders who were heads of households, that's how they were determined. Okay, these are the elders, and the heads of households would have a position of authority. The head of a household became one of the elders in the community. And later on, Israel set up a body of 70 elders who assisted Moses in the government of the nation. We read about that in Exodus 24. So he set up the 70 elders who represented the other families in the nation and were most likely elected by them, by the other family members. In order to preserve community, God's structure is necessary, where family heads or elders are responsible to be involved in the affairs of the broader community. So you've got this little community, the family, and the head of the household, who's very closely and tightly connected to the broader community and setting up and establishing that, because you're reproducing yourself. So you see there's this continuity between the little one to the broader community and the ones in charge, so they're reproducing themselves in that way. But you see that it's a representation of the most basic building block in God's kingdom. That's the family unit that is used to establish the broader community grouping. So there's this replica. So it's not just a bunch of individuals get together and set up a government or a broader civil thing, but it's coming from the family units. Heads of households would be involved in the process of electing community leaders. The family is preserved by following these principles. And Moses bowed to God's wisdom in Exodus 18 and set up the local courts. You remember Moses was sitting all day and judging the people, and his father-in-law said to him, "Hey, this is killing both you and the people. They can't wait for hours and days to get a judgment on a case." So set up these little courts where these 10 families will go to this guy and get a judgment. And then you'll have 100 and 1,000. So you've got these different court systems that could be judged. And Moses appointed men to these positions. And we read in Exodus 18 and verse 21, "Moreover, you shall select from all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, and rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens." Now it's natural to assume that in this nation of about 2 million people came out of Egypt, a big group of people, this wasn't just a handful, you've got this huge mass of people. Moses is now going to set up these court systems, and he appoints people of this character. How long will it take him to go around and evaluate everybody? So what do we assume? So that's why I'm saying it's safe to assume that these people were elected, were recognized people in the community, and the local level, they recommended these people and Moses appointed them. These are the characters I want, these are the men I'm looking for, I want character like this. And the community then evaluated men around them and said, okay, this guy is. So Moses then appointed these men. So what I'm suggesting, although the scriptures don't say the people were appointed by the local community, I'm suggesting to you in the light of the numbers that we have and that kind of stuff, that this is the way it had to be done if it was going to be accomplished. So those who lived with the people and other heads of households would have identified the godly men they wanted to lead them. Ultimately, the most important community unit that is to be protected and nurtured is what? The family. Okay, that's what we're trying to do. These broader groups, what is their fundamental objective? Protecting the family unit. Okay, that's what God is doing. That's how He's doing it. And He's doing it in this way. So He gets the little family units to be involved in setting up their protection at a higher level. At a different level. So that's the goal and objective that is trying to be accomplished. It's done by establishing, this protection of the family unit is done by establishing bigger community units, but the focus is always upon community. And the most basic community unit is the family. That's what's being protected. And the family plays this dominant role in preserving of the community all the way up to the national level. Democracy and its philosophy of equality destroys this at every level, beginning at the most basic unit. It destroys community at the family, and it destroys it at every other level as it brings and scatters people into individuals and atomistic entities. Now, the other large community that I haven't mentioned yet is obviously the church. What is the most important unit in the working of the church family? Once again, it's the individual family unit. So for a church to function properly, we have the family unit functioning. What must the church be careful to protect and nurture? The family. Should the church fail to protect and nurture the family, it's writing its own death warrant. It's destroying itself. The basic building block of God's kingdom, the family unit, must be protected. Thus, atomistic individuals are not allowed to be in positions of leadership in the church. They're not going to make it. An atomistic individual should not become a leader in the church. Godly men who are heads of households and who have demonstrated the ability to lead their own family units, they are the ones who Paul says or to be made leaders in the church. Now, can you understand why? This is not just some fancy idea or some kind of, because he had nothing else. How else can these guys be qualified? I don't know. I always suck something out my thumb. It's because of this connection, because of the importance of protecting the family unit by it kind of replicating itself in many ways. Its ideals, its goals, its priorities, and its focus has to be replicated at each level. Otherwise, it's going to be undermined. It's going to be overruled by these higher levels of authority. They're going to do things that are going to destroy the family. As we read in 1 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 7, these are the qualifications to become a leader in the church. This is a faithful saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, which is an elder, he desires a good work. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous, one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Okay, so we have some very comprehensive qualifications there for the leader of a church. And there's character qualifications with respect to his control and self-discipline and stuff. But then there's also very important qualifications there with how he rules and runs his family. Because how can we judge his ability to rule the church if he can't rule his own family? So that's an important qualification. Now there's great debate in our day as to if this is an absolute requirement. And people will often point to great historical figures. Gresham Machen, for example, was never married. Should he have had a position in the church? And I'd say no. And I'll lambaste it for that, I'm sure. And I'd say no, well, let him become a professor at a seminary. Let him do other things. But I don't know how else to evaluate him. Because if you can give me something else to use to evaluate him, because I scratch out these two sentences here as to how I evaluate his character in leadership for the church, can you tell me what I will put in there in order to judge that leadership ability? Paul gives no other qualification for leadership, way for me to evaluate that, than what he says there. So, you know, Spurgeon was a pastor at 21 or something, one of the greatest preachers that have ever existed. Does that mean that him becoming a pastor at 21 is right? Does his success mean that was right? It's a question. You know, I just don't know what to put in there in order to say, well, let's judge him. Why not give him some years to become more mature? Somebody I was speaking about his neglect of his family and his wife for his ministry sake threw David Livingstone at me and said, who can challenge David Livingstone? And he would leave his family for 4 years at a time. Well, I said David Livingstone was wrong, and he nearly fell off his chair. I dared to question David Livingstone. The only way to preserve the broad community is by protecting the most basic unit in God's kingdom. That's the family. And thus the family has a critical and major role in determining the leadership in the broader community sphere. Okay, so the family determines the leadership in the church realm, and the family has a great influence in determining that. But the emphasis is upon community, and that remains central and vital. God's authority structures and order has been revealed to us, and this is how he does it. When people ignore these, the family is weakened, which in turn undermines the church and the nation. So when we neglect these things, we undermine the whole thing. Democracy and equality undermine the family and the authority structures in the church and in the state. Its focus is not upon community, but upon atomistic individualism, and thus the equality of all individuals. We must not think that the republican form of government is democracy, though. We're not going to get into the republican form of government. I do not believe, as the American government was set up in its institution, that it was teaching democracy. I think our modern age is perverting it and pushing it down the democratic line. I think the republican form is what we should aim at with the qualifications, and maybe we can cover that at some stage. Democracy has and is assaulting true representative government. We want representative government. We see representative government in Scripture. And so we want that, and we want to preserve it, but we want to preserve it from the local level up. And it must be fully based and firmly established at the local level, where there's accountability and transparency at that level before it goes up. Democracy assaults true representative government. Because we don't truly want representative. We want this atomistic individualism. We want this equality. All people, however, are not equal when it comes to determining the direction and fate of families, the direction and fate of churches and nations, according to the Scriptures. It's not individuals who do that. What is fundamental to God's communities and preserving them is submission to His law word, everything He has said about that. The responsibility upon the head of a household is to lead his family in accordance with God's revelation. It is God who has given the authority to the father, and thus the father has to exercise it in submission to God's word. When a man marries, he receives this authority when he gains his own household. He receives this authority of the household family member now. When he marries, that's when he gains it. And he's to take up the responsibilities and go along with those responsibilities. Now there is a check upon the man becoming a head of a household. We only want godly men becoming the head of a household. What's the check on him? The fathers of the daughters who refuse to give their daughters to these guys who are not focused upon the kingdom. I realize we live in a pagan age and that's not going to happen. But that is a real check. It's a real check. And the family has the check on other family units coming into existence and a man becoming the head of a family unit. So the family has that check there as well. So if you can see that. Because you want men who are going to make good covenant heads and make good covenant households to become husbands. So if you've got daughters, do not release them to men who do not conform to these biblical principles. There is a check on people assuming positions of authority and influence in the church, and that is other believers. There's the check there. because it's other believers who are looking upon the life and the ability of those around them, and who should not allow unqualified people into these positions. And likewise, we see the check on national leaders. The people who know them should not allow them to assume positions of authority if they are not godly leaders. But when you break down the structure and you become very centralized and huge and out of control, there's no check. There's no check on that, and there's no accountability. Everyone is not equal, nor does everyone determine who should become leaders in these broader communities. Everyone doesn't determine who should become a leader. That's the assumption today. Everyone should determine, or at least every 18-year-old person should have a say in who becomes a leader in the broader community. People are expected by God to prove that they are themselves law-abiding, that is, living by every word from His mouth, before they should be granted authority to become lawmakers. Are you law-abiding? If you are law-abiding and you have proven that, and you have a track record of proving that, then you can become a lawmaker, whether it's in the family, as a head of a household, you become a lawmaker. If you're coming into the church, you become a lawmaker. And it's all under God, by the way. You don't become a law unto yourself, but you get put in a position of authority to make laws only if you have demonstrated clearly your ability to submit to law. That's the only check we've got. And so we cut off people who are not submitted to the law. We cut them off from becoming lawmakers. Democracy doesn't preserve this because its focus is upon man. Democracy believes that law originates with man. Democracy has faith in man. Man is good. He is generally good, and he will arrive at the right conclusion. And he grants sovereignty to man. Therefore, man should be the lord of his own destiny. And we give him the ability, and we want to give him the power to do that. The voice of the people is not the voice of God, as democracy says. In Deuteronomy 23 and verse 1, we read a passage there where it talks about eunuchs being barred from membership in the community. The eunuch was somebody who was castrated. And they were barred from becoming members in the community of Israel, which means that community aspect is becoming governing members, assuming a position where they could get into a position of lawmaking. Why do you think they were barred from becoming members? Because they had no future. They had no children. They had no generational vision. And therefore their ability to judge and the decisions they would make were very hampered, as opposed to God's generational vision looking forward, where you've got invested interest in your children and your grandchildren and your children's children down the line. And therefore your decisions and your lawmaking is governed and restricted and directed according to that. And here God says, no, these people can't. There's not equality. It's not just equality here. These people are forbidden. In that same passage, Deuteronomy 23, it talks about the Moabites and the Ammonites who were not allowed to become members of the community for 10 generations. I.e. they could not become lawmakers, influencing the direction and the structure of the nation for 10 generations. There's no equality there. No equality. And that gets into all kinds of debates as you see pagans coming into Christianity. It doesn't just happen instantly. He doesn't just say, oh yes, I believe Jesus. Now my whole life is renewed and I understand when I've come out of the darkness and depravity of paganism. And where I've been in that, my family's been in that for 100 generations. And now I've come out of that. Suddenly, because I believed in Jesus, I know how to make just laws. I know how to live godly. No, you don't. So God says 10 generations for these guys. This paganism that they were so deeply involved in, where God said, we're going to come and wipe out these people. They are so filthy and depraved. We're going to destroy them. It's going to take them a long time to become members. So they had to learn this whole process of becoming law keepers before they could become lawmakers. So there's no equality there. You speak about that today. A generation of pagans coming out of darkness. Let's say you're going to find a tribe in the middle of some jungle somewhere. I won't even name a continent in case I step on toes. You're going to find a tribe in some continent somewhere, and they've never heard the gospel for 1,000 years. Nobody even knew they existed, and suddenly you come across them and you bring them out. Do you think instantly we've got a people who can now come and sit on the Senate legislative? Probably could. But do you understand that mindset? We've got to realize it takes generations to get the paganism out of us. Europe, it took generations to get the mindset corrected. You know, when you read about how barbaric the Germanic people were, the Germans, and just horrific, and it took a long time of Christian influence and conversion. So all I'm emphasizing there is this fallacious idea that equality is this great goal. There is no equality in God's kingdom from that sense. The only sure word we have for all things is God's revelation, and He has revealed how we are to function and who is to have authority in all these areas, the home, the church, and the state. We ignore these at our own peril. Fathers, if your life is too busy to do the responsibilities He wants you to carry out with respect to your household, then radically prune your activities. Cut them off. Be violent. Rip out that eye. Rip off the arm. Cut it off. Because there's fundamental objectives that need to be accomplished. And if the life is packed with too much stuff, you can be distracted from doing what you need to do. Don't allow the world's lies about democracy and equalitarianism to distract you from what God expects of you. the most basic building block in the kingdom, is also the most fundamental voting unit in the church and the state. One person, one vote destroys community. It destroys it. That's the democratic mind. One person, one vote. That's how it goes. Turn 18 years old and you should vote. Because what that does is destroys community, it destroys the family, the church and the state, and it exalts atomistic individuals. You vote as a family unit. That's the body. It flows out of that, because this is what we're trying to preserve. As soon as you split that up and you give everybody a vote, you've got, maybe you've got five eligible voters, members in the family, and they all vote for five different things. It destroys, it's breaking down the most essential and fundamental unit that God is seeking to preserve. Democracy presumes equality, and equality destroys God's biblical community. If we lose this battle in the family, we will lose it in the church and the nation. If we don't preserve the integrity of the family, we lose the whole battle. And democracy, the idea of democracy, severely assaults the preservation of God's most basic building block in the kingdom. Any questions or comments?